1:33 p.m. on March 20th. Members present are Representative Jewell, Representative Guttenberg, Representative T. Wilson, Vice Chair Fairclough, Stoltz, Co-Chair Thomas, Representatives Edgman, Costello, and Newman, rounding us out. We have a quorum to do business. We're continuing the bills held over from the previous hearing. We have on our docket 196, House Bills 196, and House Bills 261, House Bill 337, the Board of Architects, Lands, Engineers, and Surveyors, which we didn't get to in two previous announcements. And then we have House Bill 358, a bill that we worked with a couple of members on, the sponsor, to make a minor change and bring back before us. So that's going to be our scheduled bills today. First bill up is House Bill 196. We have a committee substitute with a minor amendment. It's I believe it's an effective date. Representative Fairclough, Madam Vice Chair, would you move the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move before the committee the CS for House Bill 196, Finance 27-LS0529/I, dated 3/20/2012.
Object for the presentation by committee staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Michelle, staff to House Finance. The CS before you, there are two changes from the version that you went over this morning. It is on page 7. The date of originally was January 1st, 2012. The date was changed to January 1st, 2013. And
that's a year later, but what is the, would you give us the explanation of why that's necessary?
Then, through the chair, Joe Michelle, staff to House Finance, the change has to reflect the fact that there need to adopt certain regulations to put this into effect. So it was the will of the sponsor to allow one additional year for the department to review the proper regulations and put them into effect.
Really noted on the record now. So I'll remove my objection. Is there any other objection? The new CS, as cited, is now back before us. Representative Edgman, sorry. Just leave where we left off, and we're going to engage in the. We've had some discussions on the fiscal note. We're going to ask Mr. Teal to come up on behalf of the committee, actually. And
Mr. Chairman, while Mr. Teal comes to the table, it's my hope that his discussion about the new fiscal notes will resolve my concern as a sponsor as well as the committee's concern about having a more a fiscal note that reflects actually the streamlining of the process that we're trying to achieve with House Bill 196.
Appreciate your assistance, Mr. Teal. Welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman. For the record, David Teal, Director of the Legislative Finance Division, and the sponsor did ask us to work on these fiscal notes to make them appear a little more like as he expected them to appear, which I guess as the rest of the committee expected them to appear too, because all this bill really does is consolidate the bridge and bulk fuel loan programs into a single place. So you have three fiscal notes in front of you. They're hard to tell apart, but if you look in the upper right, you'll see one for the Alaska Energy Authority. And that fiscal note is very much the same as it originally appeared. There is a loss of revenue on the bottom line there of $57,000 per year. That's because the bill eliminates the application and origination fees associated with the loan program. That money now goes into the general fund and costs communities the $57,000. The second change is that the 53.6 in administrative or operating costs associated with the loan program now go away from AEA's budget. So they're essentially removed from the entire process. The second note would be for investments. And there you'll see that instead of the 86,000 in the original fiscal note, we simply transferred the 53,600 that used to be in AEA, now goes to investments. And because AEA will be retaining their position associated with this, and because investments wants to add a position, we did add a position, or kept that additional position in the fiscal note. But you should note that that won't fully fund a position. It's only a portion, but then again, this program should not require a dedicated full-time position. And just noting that the cost of that position in investments will be directly charged to the bulk fuel revolving loan fund rather than going through the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. And they used to appear as interagency receipts. I don't see any reason to do that. They can direct charge to the program. So the third note is for the Division of Investments, and that one is effectively zeroed out, does not need to be transmitted with the bill. The reason for the zero is that the division, or the Community and Regional Affairs Division, currently provides technical assistance to those people or those communities applying for loans. That won't change. They still will be helping people with bridge loans. The other loans, the bulk fuel loans, the communities are more prepared, have done this before, and should be able to just work with the Division of Investments. So essentially that note is zeroed out, and of note is that at their note had those costs of technical assistance changing from general funds to the bulk fuel loan program. We didn't see any reason to do that. Again, that's what Community and Regional Affairs does, is assist communities. So,
let's stand briefly at ease. David, can you come up?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I just blew it when I said I meant to say that the Community and Regional Affairs fiscal note is zero and doesn't need to be transmitted with the bill. The investments one is, as shown in front of you, 53,600. So in summary, the net change in operating costs is zero here, but you do have a loss of general fund revenue of 57,000 annually.
Is that a fair question?
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if, Mr. Steele, what would you say about a 0.50 FTE instead of one full person, or do we not do that on fiscal notes if we're only funding a portion of it so that the department knows our expectations, that we're not short funding them, that our expectation is that because AEA was providing the service with a half-time person, shouldn't we reflect that if that's really what we're giving them in the fiscal note versus providing a full-time person, or do we think that there are receipts or other dollars that might be available to backfill it if we give them a full FTE?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, you could add a half-time position, but they can't hire a half-time position. So if they need a position, they would hire a person. Note that the position is not fully funded. They wanted $86,000. So to get the other approximately $35,000 for that position, they would have to pull that from other loan programs. So I guess you could say it is half to three-quarter time in the fiscal note. That's what's funded. And certainly if it were the will of the committee, you could change that to a half-time position. And it doesn't make a lot of difference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Adopt the updated fiscal notes prepared by the Finance Committee. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing on the fiscal notes that I would suggest to the committee is...
I don't move it. I would have asked them, so that was out of... I didn't make a motion. Go ahead.
On the fiscal notes, sorry, I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry that I derailed your train of thought.
We're on railroads now. I saw a newspaper article.
You're old enough to do that.
Yes, I am. We'll come back to it.
Okay, let's proceed in order. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, I thought you were going to say something.
Well, no, I had a question on the fiscal note, but.
No. I would like you to
you have to see. Remember it.
I'm glad the camera's not here.
It's still being recorded here. We'll take a brief at ease. I'm sorry, Anna.
Moment, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if the committee should consider any kind of compensation or additional funds for the development of regulations. We're asking for consolidation. We're providing money for a half-time FTE, but when I was originally looking at the fiscal notes, the department is going to have to go through and make some new regulations that will require time and dollars. And so originally when I was looking at the fiscal notes, I was wondering why we didn't see a larger number at the beginning when we knew that there would be additional work for the department to make sure that they could expeditiously provide that information for everyone, which is not something AEA is currently doing. So I would have no idea on how to calculate that, but it seems like they may need some additional funding if we want those regulations written in a timely manner.
I think we probably have enough moving parts within that department that inserted.
Mr. Chairman, I was once an employee of that department, and I worked with members of the Division of Admin on doing regulations. They've got full-time staff that work on regulations. I'm sure we'll take a little more time involved with the other parts, but I see nodding of the head back there. So.
Senator Faircliffe.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move from the committee the CS for House Bill Number 196, Finance 27-LS0529-I, with three fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Hearing no objections, that friend is departing. We'll take a brief at ease. Next bill, House Bill 261, previously adopted committee substitute. Again, we're at a fiscal note issue. I think we do you have any commentary on that, Mr. Michelle? And Mr. Clark? Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgman. The fiscal note now in the committee's packets remains a zero fiscal note. It's simply revised from the one received this morning that included some errors in the explanation in the analysis page. Those errors have been deleted. And what you have before you is accurate.
Any other questions you want to say, Mr. Benjamin?
Mr. Chairman, just that the one sentence, the two sentences referring to the earlier version of the bill was taken out, it still remains a zero fiscal note.
Yep. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, just for the committee's sake, I did inquire outside the committee if there's a lower interest rate available for somebody who has a current fishing loan, because we've changed it several times, if there is a lower interest rate available that they could get for, I think it was a $100 fee, they can reapply to have that loan redone. So there is an availability to have that happen, to refinance those. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had referred to a letter that was in the packet earlier indicating some concern with the bill, and had had the opportunity to discuss with that person over the lunch hour whether they were still concerned after the CS had been introduced in finance, and they maintain the concern. So I just have a couple of questions. I'm supportive of the effort, but just want to give the sponsor an opportunity to respond in case something comes up on the House floor about the issues. So as I understand it, this will provide lower cost money than is out there in a commercial market after an individual who applies for it can't qualify in that outside market. So the first question, I guess, has to do with how do we determine whether they have been declined versus just not qualified, and is there something in statutes or in regulation that helps make that determination?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, there is indeed something in statute, and if I may just read very quickly, the language reads in statute is not, it's clearly stated in the Commercial Fishing Loan Act statute, this is a reading, paraphrasing, that a borrower is only eligible for Section B loans if he or she is, and then quote, is not eligible for financing from a state financial institution as defined in Title VI, or a federally chartered financial institution, or the Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, eligible, how is the eligibility determined?
Again, through the chair, Representative Fairclough, the eligibility requirements for Section B loans call for someone having been a state resident for a continuous period of 2 years immediately preceding the date of the application, must not be eligible again through a commercial bank or through a CFAB, must lack employment opportunities other than commercial fishing and area residents, economically dependent on commercial fishing as a livelihood and as a traditional way of life, must not have past due on any child support obligations, must never have received a loan under the Section A provision of the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Act. And I guess I would finish by saying that all of these provisions would make it difficult, if not outright impossible, for an applicant to seek lending through traditional means, such as CFAB or a bank or anything else. And really, this meets the spirit of this loan, is to help those that need a leg up in terms of getting involved in the commercial fishing industry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a bit different in qualifying for a loan in the language that we currently have versus being declined by a commercial lender, but I understand the intent and support the intent of the legislation. Is there a way, if you make your payments on time, that you receive an additional discount on your loan percentages under the B loan?
There is, through the chair, Representative Fairclough, it's called the Pay on Time program. If after being in the loan program for a year, you comply with your payments for that 1 year period, you're eligible for as much as a 1% reduction. So right now, at 2% above prime, you would get in the program, let's say, 5.25% interest rate. You would be eligible, if all went well, and I'm hoping I'm reciting this correctly, to go down as much as 4.25%.
Mr. Chairman, I won't belabor it. I'm just wondering how that competes in a commercial market and how discounted that rate is in that market.
We haven't heard testimony from the traditional banks. We have a commercial fishing and agricultural bank, which seems more interested in protecting their turf than serving the farmers and the fishermen, which bothers me a little bit. That's my observation. But it is, you know, the commercial fishing and agricultural bank, and maybe they ought to put them in the core if they're more concerned about turf and ground. But that's editorial, Mr. Co-Chair. Did you have something?
I have just a comment, Mr. Co-Chair. My son recently got a loan from the state 2 years ago or 3 years ago to buy a boat. Danny Adelson, because he's 30, back then he was probably 37, He went through the process, applied to two banks, and doesn't have a pot to pee in, you know, as they say. And so, you know, he was a bad risk to the banks. And
that's an intricate financial.
that's the fisherman's terminology. Turned down by two banks, went to the state, and got a loan. Now, the difference between the state and the banks had asked me to co-sign at the banks. And at the state, I did. So, you know, it says, you mess up, I own a boat. But he did have the permit. So, and just want to point out, about 25 years ago, CFAB never lives us down. I applied for a loan with CFAB and was denied because I wasn't qualified. I was trying to buy a Bristol Bay boat and permit, and I went through them because I knew I couldn't qualify through a commercial bank or the state because of my assets. And they said that I didn't qualify because I had no experience, that I had already had 20 years of fishing as a gillnet in Southeast. And most people will tell you the gillnet goes from Southeast to Bristol Bay is pretty aggressive because they're not a fish. And, you know, you gillnet anywhere, it's the same fishery. And they've never been able to live that down. But then, hey, you know, you say no, and I didn't qualify anywhere. And back then, it was just a boat and permit. It was only like $50,000, you know, which was damn cheap. Jeez, I'm saying a lot of bad words. That's that fisherman coming out of me.
Yeah, we're not on the Raven's Walk. Finance.
My heart is no, yeah. But anyway, I like this. I think it's a good beginning for younger people. So when we get to the closing, I want to make a closing comment because I think this has been a good program. And I've used, like I said, I go out to Division Loans. I've been going out there for 30-plus years with my dad, and all the old crew was out there. So anyway, you're right about protecting turf. I've had that battle with them before.
Okay. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out to the committee that there are multiple letters of support in addition to the one letter that is raising issues about the letter. So with the support of the committee, I'll move CAS for House Bill 261 Finance 27-LS0968-B, dated 3/19/2012, with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
I will object so the co-chair can do his valedictory for this.
No, fine. I said no more comments.
Oh, okay. I move my objection. Representative Guerra.
Oh, I just for the record, just for bad words that were just said, I just wanted to excuse Representative Costello for what was said. That's all.
Okay. With that, the bill's moved out of committee. We'll take just a brief at ease to sign the report. House Finance, come back to order. 209. We have next bill. The second to the last bill is House Bill 358. There were two issues that were brought up the last hearing. One was to have an addition in the CS to prohibit political actions, and the other was to put a cap. Then Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill Number 358 Finance before the committee 27-LS1406-I, dated 3/19/2012.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, Representative Pruitt, put on the record the activities you worked on with took the committee's directives.
I'll go ahead and pass that on to Representative Pruitt. I represent District 21. I'll go ahead and allow or ask Dirk to go ahead and cover those issues for me, please.
Mr. Kraft.
Thank you. For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff Representative Pruitt. The only section that was added was page 2, line 26. 4 was added, Representative Guerra's request to add more emphasis that this would not be used for any lobbying purposes on any elected official or any sort of campaign.
Let's see the exact, why don't you read the exact language? Which line was it? Okay, it was on lines 26 and 27.
Mr. Chair, the language reads, in an advertising campaign that refers to a particular elected, so starting out on page 1, page 2, E, a qualified trade association may not use money from a contract awarded under A of this section, then you move down to line 26-4, in an advertising campaign that refers to a particular elected official or candidate for public office or specifically promotes or criticizes a political party.
Okay, that's pretty clear. In our the cap is reflected in the fiscal note. So those are the two major changes. One is reflected.
Mr. Chair, we tried to put the cap in the legislation itself, but we were advised that that might not be a good idea to put that directly in statute, as that would take away a lot of the appropriating powers of the legislatures.
It certainly takes away flexibility, I guess. Fiscal notes are certainly a lot more flexible. But any general questions on the bill as the amendments that were made to the bill in the CS or the broader bill? Far too easy. We have the updated fiscal note. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I would point the committee to QTA contracts. It's OMB component number 1844 in FY13. It shows a total operating cost of $1,500,000. Those are GF funds, and that would be the cap that you previously spoke of. Fiscal note that's labeled number one, allocation economic development, OMB component 2743, those are indeterminate fiscal notes.
Yep, I think we'll just adopt the House Finance one rather than the indeterminate one.
Thank you.
If that's the pleasure of the committee, I think that's the more accurate. It's more determinate. We'll just refer to the component 1844 when dated 3/20/12. And that'll be the only fiscal note before our committee. Any questions? And then on the any amendments? Representative Fairclough. I objected to the adoption. I'll remove that. The CS is before us. And now back to the final passage.
Mr. Chairman, I move from committee the CS for House Bill number 358, Finance, 27-LS1406/I, Bailey, dated 3/19/2012, with attached fiscal note with the OMB component number 1844 that shows FY13 a total expenditure of $1,500,000 with committee recommendations.
That's the topic. That is the maximum, not necessarily the actual.
Correct.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Vera.
I'm sorry, this is late, but that's over 2 years, correct?
Yeah, it's a multi-year, yeah, to 2015. It will supersede some of our existence around here. I know my colleagues leaving. With that, hearing no objection, the bill is moved from committee with the House Finance Committee fiscal note. and the one prepared by the House Finance Committee, and individual recommendations to the committee. Will. Representative Jewell.
I wanted to get by the objection part because I don't object, obviously, Mr. Chairman. And was out of the room when much of the hearing took place the last time. But as I did catch a component of the meeting where Representative Faircloth referred to the time that we were back in D.C., geez, almost a month ago now. And one of the things that we realized back then was the need to do work probably in the home state of, around the country, actually, to get a groundswell of support. Because just to try and be reactive to a particular bill has not been getting the job done. And so having more of a full-time effort, I think, is the beginning of what Alaska may have to look forward to in this issue and maybe others as well in how we market ourselves to Congress and to the people outside of the state of Alaska who unfortunately operate with very little accurate information.
Thank you. Are there any other, that was an objection that, or any objections, I think. The bill is moved out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll stand briefly, please.
$50 million, I mean, that's what our...
House Finance, come back to order for our last item of business today. That's House Bill 337. The Architects, Engineers, Surveyors Bill. Representative Faircloth, we have an unscathed bill at this point. Let's go ahead and adopt this as our version just for protocol. So.
Mr. Chairman, I move before the committee House Bill number 337-LS1405-A.
That without objection, that will be the working document this committee addresses, hopefully remains unscathed. Welcome. Please present the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I am Lynette Burge, staff member for Representative Thompson. I apologize for his absence today. He is sick with the flu. I would like to thank the chair and the committee for hearing House Bill 337 today. It's an act relating to the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, and to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. For brevity's sake, I'll refer to the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors as the AELS Board. House Bill 337 revises the statutes to designate a full-time investigator, rather than part-time, to serve the AELS Board. This full-time position will ensure that the AELS Board can meet the growing demands of oversight of the industries in its area of responsibility. Currently, the AELS Board shares one part-time investigator with five other boards: construction contractors, home inspectors, electrical administrator, mechanical administrator, and storage tank workers. The investigator's oversight includes a total of approximately 20,000 licensees. Of these 20,000 licensees, 28% of them are AELS registrants. That's over 5,600 licensees for the AELS board alone. A new regulation will take effect within the next 30 days. 10 additional engineering professions that have not been previously regulated will be placed under the AELS board's oversight. Therefore, the number of branches will expand from the current 6 branches to a new total of 16 branches. Some of the newly regulated professions are from the structural, environmental, nuclear, and industrial engineer branches. This means the number of AELS licensees the board will oversee will increase dramatically. It is necessary for the safety of Alaskans to add these branches. However, the addition of these 10 branches will add to an already heavy workload for the part-time investigator. Each of the six boards that the part-time investigator oversees has an increasing number of licensees. The investigator faces mounting pressure to spend less time on AELS board registrants and more time on the five other boards to which he is assigned. On top of the oversight workload, this sole investigator is required to maintain knowledge of all the statutes and regulations of all boards he oversees. Clearly, the lack of a full-time investigator for the board could reduce its effectiveness in carrying out the charges required by the statutes and the regulations. An unintended consequence of overloading the investigator may result in a failure to fulfill, to the fullest extent, the state and regulatory charges. As a result, the state of Alaska may be put at risk and inadvertently create a hazard to public health, safety, and welfare. House Bill 337 will ensure that the AELS board can continue proper oversight of the licensees while remaining in compliance with all state regulations and all state statutes mandated by the legislature. As a result of hiring a full-time investigator, the AELS board will be able to maintain its reputation and integrity of the professions it oversees. At this time, I'd like to address the fiscal note and point out that the AELS board intends to begin forward funding the full-time investigator position starting in December 2013, at which time the next scheduled fee increase will take place. Currently, the licensees pay $125 for biennial licensure. It is estimated that the pay increase will be minimal, approximately $20 or less per licensee per year. All testimony to date on this bill has been in favor of the pay increase. There was no testimony in opposition. That concludes my introduction to HB 337. I'll attempt to answer any questions that the chair of the committee may have, but I would like to point out that there are a couple people online, and we also have Don Haberger here to testify as well.
Are the landscape architects still part of this board?
Yes.
They're just not referred to in the title?
The registration for architects, I would imagine that maybe they are combined into one category, but maybe that's a good question for
Mr. Hammer.
Director.
But that was just a question. As they have sought board seats in the past, they originally came onto the board saying they had no interest in having a board seat, and they're such a minute part, they're almost as analogous as the tattoo artist to the barbers and hairdressers. As far as in the size and number, they had wanted a seat, and they changed their mind after a couple of years, and they came back repeatedly trying to get a seat on the board. When we have thousands and thousands of engineers and surveyors, as opposed to landscape architects, and it's when they got pretty brutal with me when I reminded them of their past agreement. But so, just wanted that this isn't resurfaced as an issue in seeking a seat or representation. They do have representation, but so that's not on the table?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
I like no better than not to my knowledge. I might have to hold this and find out. It's not. Do you support or oppose it?
Having the landscape architects?
Seat.
Personally? Or as a, I don't think that the board has that.
I'm asking you, I don't really care about your personal opinion. You're here representing Representative Thompson, if you.
Right. We are just trying to make sure that the board that of registration with the current people that are under that board have enough oversight with a full-time investigator. We're not adding other boards to it. The board did meet in December of 2011, and they are going to add some branches, but that branch, the branches that are added will not include the landscape architects.
Representative Costello.
Through the chair, I was hoping, could we have Don Haberger, the Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, come to the table?
Mr. Haberger, you've been summoned by your committee chairman, subcommittee chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm Director of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. Ready for questions?
Oh, through the chair. Mr. Habiger, I know in the budget subcommittee for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, we heard lengthy testimony related to some challenges involving investigations and the process for investigations and the rising costs that all of the professional licensing boards are seeing because of, well, it depends on, you know, your interpretation, but I was hoping that you could share with the committee the department's effort to sort of wrap your arms around the issue, because my concern here is that we're taking one we've identified the problem in the budget process, and your department has been trying to address the problem, and then the bill comes in with a solution to add an investigator, and yet it's my understanding that you're analyzing the process that investigations are handled, and perhaps not every complaint needs to be taken, you know, to the nth degree before it's turned away. And I was hoping that you could shed some light on that, because I don't necessarily want to see a pattern where all the boards are coming to us asking for additional investigators when the department's in the middle of a process right now in trying to address that problem.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, as you know, you've asked numerous questions in that single probably question, and you're correct. The division is going through a rather intensive review of investigations because of legislative audits and a number of comments for a number of years about timeliness in their investigative processes. A number of things that we have looked into and are trying to correct at this time is our investigative software, for example. Even though we bought a relatively new system and it was intended to address a number of our issues, as we've begun to work with that new system, we realize we still need to make improvements there. And so the analysis has been done. The recommendations are before management right now, and we're considering how best to go. That's just one example of a process that we're going through. Some of the audits asked for simple things, for example, like making sure we have a correct hierarchy of investigative under the chief, senior investigators, for example. So we're implementing those. It is true we're in the middle of these fixes, and it is also true that there are more requests for our time over time. For example, in 2011, we put in our investigative report. You can find that on our website that we had 1,100 requests or from the public asking for attention to make sure that a licensee was not in violation of rules and regulations. If I talk to my investigators, which I have, and ask them what an average caseload is, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 45 cases a year, and we have 18 investigators. So the demand for their time is increasing, and it's trying to manage those resources with those that we have that we're working on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understood, we're going to add 10 more branches, 10 more groups of people to this organization, to this board. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, regulations just have gone into, I'm not sure if they're in effect right now or if they were recently signed by the Lieutenant Governor, but through regulation, there are additional disciplines that require a licensure. In the engineering field. The way I understand it from my staff is that some engineers that currently are generally licensed may specialize and convert their general licensure to a specific license, one of these categories. Others will be new into the state system.
Follow-up, sir? So how many people are we, you know, talking about, and how much more funding will be coming through here?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. I have heard estimates, new licensure in these disciplines, somewhere in the 1,000 from staff. I'm not sure if that's a correct number or not, but that's what I recall hearing.
And one final question. So for adding, are we adding all these people into this group because there's been lawsuits? Is there a reason that there's some kind of, I mean, because what was being said is that we're doing this for the safety of Alaskans. I guess I don't know why we're adding all these branches of people in, because I've not heard there's a whole lot of safety issues.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's difficult for me to speak on behalf of the board on this particular one. Statute requires that they, if you will, regulate their own profession. I can speculate a little bit on that they felt that specialization was better for their profession, and they went through quite a lengthy process, public process, on this specialization. Eventually, they did pass those regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out if we're adding all these extra people, does that make a change on how the board's made up, and how much revenue are we talking about for this investigator? I guess I don't feel like I have enough information, but I'll keep looking. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would oppose this bill if it wasn't for the fact that the board is going to pay for the investigator. So it's $109,000 from what I understand. The board is going to self-regulate by raising fees on their own members to pay for that $109,000. It's a zero cost to the state, and with that, I'm comfortable. So is my understanding correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, yes, licensing statute requires us to pass costs on to the licensees, and so they will see an adjustment in their licensing fees.
Just through the chair. And then how do we know, how am I comfortable that the members of that profession have agreed to that? Just through the board, that the board has decided that, well, as spokesman for the profession?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, in labor and commerce, we had a number of folks that were available to testify from the profession, and all of them supported the bill.
Okay. Through the chair, I suppose if there is a backlash, then we'll just consider taking the position out. But it doesn't cost us anything, so I'm okay with it.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a pretty contentious board. I know some people on it, and I hear a lot about it, more than I think every other board that put together. But of the action of the investigations that are done inside of this board, how many or what percentage are actionable after that? Do you know? Do you know the answer to that?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I don't have that figure off the top of my head, but I can get it for you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Havager, when we're looking at the makeup of the board, it asks to add an executive secretary and an investigator. They have currently one investigator now, or the executive director acts as an investigator, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Newman. We have 18 investigators, and currently, by statute, only one board has a dedicated investigator, and that's medical. Everybody else is kind of shared, and they work through a positive timekeeping system where they're needed. If they are more needed for nursing, for example, we'll deploy additional resources to do that. Right now, there is one investigator that solely does take care of kind of the construction industry, and that individual spends majority of their time on architects, engineers, and land surveyors, and they also do construction. Also, for your information, the department has an agreement with Department of Labor for additional investigative resources for the construction industry.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
That's my assumption, and by adding this investigator, that disputes that come before this board would be solved faster to help projects move along faster. And is that the end justification on this?
Through the chair, Representative Nguyen, the board believes they will have better service, and I would agree with that assessment. We can have that individual assigned to them solely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions?
Just one more comment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
I'm only tepidly supportive of this, and I'll just say why. That, you know, district attorneys, public defenders, they have caseloads of over 100 cases. And now they work longer hours. And I suppose this is sort of a pitch for us to be sympathetic when they come before us, but they work their butts off and they work long hours. And you told me that your investigators have caseloads of 40 cases. And to me, that's just not a compelling statistic. You know, in a case where the profession wants to regulate itself more and wants to pay for it, I'm okay with it. I just, those numbers are staggering to me. I should share that.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I meant to say that if they had their druthers, the best case scenario would be 45 cases. That is not the case. They have additional cases, more cases than that.
Yeah, Representative Costello.
Through the chair, so Mr. Habiger, this then would create one additional dedicated investigator for one specific board, and there's a pool of investigators that the department currently has, and other boards, as I understand it, are under the same situation where their investigations are rising too. So my question is, and perhaps it's for the sponsor staff, is would the, do you know if the sponsor would be willing to add the investigator but allow that person to benefit all of the professional licensing boards that the state has, and then bill them essentially based on the work, so that in effect the person could be dedicated to this particular board if the caseload requires it, but it would give the flexibility to the department to assign that investigator where the need is.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I think that Representative Thompson was concerned about the number of licensees that are under the purview of this particular one part-time investigator. Since the number of licensees and branches is growing, it's there's an imbalance of the amount of work that he's able to handle for the AELS board and the other boards that he regulates. So I think that he thought that it would be a really good idea to have one dedicated investigator for that entire group, and not to have them be shared. Did I answer your question?
I have a question for Mr. Habiger. During the budget process, did the department consider requesting an additional investigator, or did you hold off on that because you were in the process of studying the problem before you came up with recommendations?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, it is really the latter. We did not consider making any changes to staffing until we further investigate what we consider the number of issues that have driven some of the comments in the legislative audits.
Final question. And when do you expect those recommendations again to be made available?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, a number of things I think that we told your committee is, for example, we're doing a cost allocation analysis. We're in the tail end of that, but we don't expect that to be completed for another 30 to 60 days. We think we will have better recommendations later this spring.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, we have two people online for public testimony. Board Brownfield, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Name and affiliation.
Mr. Chairman and members of the House Finance Committee, for the record, my name is Boyd Brownfield. I have been a registered civil engineer in the state of Alaska since August of 1975. I have most recently served on the AELS board for 8 years, from March 2004 to March 2012. My tenure as a board member, I served as the chairman for 2 years and the vice chair for 4 years, two of which are on each side of chairmanship. I am here to support the AELS board having its own full-time investigator. AELS is the third largest professional board of about 18 boards, nursing being first and barbers and hairdressers second, and AELS is third. While AELS is the third largest board, I would suggest that it is the first in the category of complexity, having four separate and distinct professions that we serve, that being architecture, engineers, land surveyors, and landscape architectures. In addition, within the engineering profession alone, there are six separate and distinct branches of engineering: civil, chemical, mechanical, electrical, mining, and petroleum engineering, each having its own separate technical challenges. These six branches will shortly increase in size to 15. I think somebody mentioned 16. It's actually from 6 to 15 separate engineering branches. This uniqueness in the complexity and diversity places a significant additional demand on our investigator, who must have a clear working knowledge and understanding of all professions and branches within those professions, if he or she is to do their job efficiently. I mentioned one investigator. We need to clarify that. I heard one saying that we are asking for an additional investigator. That's not true. In reality, our investigator, as was said before, serves AELS only part-time. He is assigned five separate boards, four beside AELS. So more correctly, AELS has the attention of 20% of one investigator, and we're the third largest in the group and the most complex. As with other boards, our sole mandate is to adopt regulations to carry out our mission to protect the public's health, safety, and welfare, and welfare through the regulation of the practice of architecture, engineering, land surveying, and landscape architecture. Now, that's a tall order for only 20% of one investigator's time. And we're fortunate to have an individual, namely Mr. John Savage, for our 20% investigator. We clearly need him as a full-time investigator. That's all we're asking for. We're not asking for an additional investigator. Incidentally, as it was pointed out before, this is not a groundbreaking precedence. The medical board, as you've been told, fourth largest professional board, already has its investigator assigned solely to and as an integral part of their board. And I firmly believe it is imperative that AELS have the same arrangement if we're going to cover the health, safety, and welfare of the entire state. There were a few other comments that were made, and I'd like to see if there's a way I can sort of crest it or answer some questions that weren't answered previously. Landscape architect, they are a temporary, non-voting seat, and the significance of their population on our board is about 35 registrants. So that's not a big deal, and people should not make that a big deal. They are still part of our board. They act totally within the board. They participate, but by statutes, they're temporary and they're non-voting. Another issue, you had said that why do you need 15 as opposed to, you know, 6? For 27 years, we've had 6 branches of engineering, and we've mentioned that before. And it served well for 27 years, but we have gotten into a point where we're one of few states that still only have 6. And what we're doing now, for instance, an engineer who is a structural engineer, and clearly that is a single engineer apart from others, such as civil engineering. But if a structural engineer comes into the state of Alaska and says, I want to be a professional engineer and come to Alaska and work there, we have to turn to him and say, nope, you can't do that, because we only have a civil engineer, and you have to take the civil engineer test. And that's, and the same thing goes with architectural engineer, but I mean the agriculture engineer. If they come in to the state, and there is a huge agricultural business in Matsu Valley alone, we require them to take the examination for a civil engineer. And that same theme goes all the way through our organization. It's time for Alaska to recognize that 6 branches are not sufficient to serve our needs. And what happens is out-of-state folks get it, and if they do get business, they have to go to a civil engineer, regardless of what business they want, in many cases, to get work done in the state of Alaska. So I know very clearly that we need one full-time investigator. And as I said, this is not precedence, because it's already being done now. In conclusion, I would publicly like to thank Representative Steve Thompson of Fairfax for sponsoring Bill 337, and Representative Kurt Olson of Kenai for co-sponsoring this House Bill 337. And of course, Mr. Chairman, I thank you and your committee for the opportunity to speak to and in support of HB 337. And I would be glad to answer any specific questions you may have. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. See no questions, but the sponsor statement said 6 to 16. That is why people are referring to that. So if they're wrong, then we'll fix it. But
yes, sir. To explain that, there are 17
that's not love it to death.
Chosen from. One of them was architect, engineer.
Yes.
We have architects and we have engineers. And to bring them into the fold, the architect engineer, it would be confusing to the public that we felt that they probably wouldn't understand, well, are you an architect or are you an engineer? So we felt it was too soon for us to consider architect engineer. So one of those branches we did not.
Okay, thank you. You don't want to love it to death. We intend to move it unless we want to do talk and love it to death here. Arlie Hightower, also, are you there? If you can minimize your comments, we can move the bill for the representative.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of House Bill 337. And my name is Harley Hightower. I've worked in the profession of architecture in Alaska since 1964. And as a principal architect since 1974. I presently chair the AELS board. I will not take your time by repeating provisions of other testimony, but I would like to say I do concur with those that I'm following. And I would like also to reiterate just a few of the issues. And the board is presently prevented from performing its charge of protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the public. This is a result of our shared investigator being overextended due to his obligations to numerous boards and the increase in registrants. Secondary to the health, safety, welfare issue, the four jurisdictions, and they are in a low average in the arena of fees. If a small increase occurs as a result of House Bill 337, it will not be significant. And I would like to, a couple of questions that were asked by the committee I would like to respond to. One is the investigator pool, and we didn't feel that that is, would be a good idea because there's so many statutes and regulations that it's difficult for an investigator to know those statutes and regulations adequately that deals with one board, much less multiple boards. And the other one was that you're not aware of any safety issues. Just in the last month, Anchorage has had three roof collapses, and all of the collapses occurred at with a level of snow on the roof that the present snow load, it does not exceed what the building should have been designed for. Fortunately, I don't believe we had any injuries. I know the first one was a large collapse in a church, and it was empty, but none of those were designed to the standard they should have been because Anchorage's snow load is 40 pounds per square feet, and we have not reached that yet. This concludes my testimony, and I'd like to thank the House Finance Committee for your effort in reviewing this important issue. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Any questions? You must have been reading my notes up here, Harley. I wrote down, why can't the engineers design a roof that won't fail in Alaska? So they're good. I had a note here to hold it. The co-chair walked out to move this bill. Is there anybody in the audience wish to testify? Nobody online. So we'll close public testimony. Bring it back to the committee discussion. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question for Don. The public comments that we just heard said that we weren't adding a position, but I show here that we are adding a position. And so if we're adding a position and we're are your current positions for investigators with GF dollars?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, we are adding a position. They are with GF fee-supported services.
Mr. Chairman, where I'm going is that this particular bill has one person that is dedicated, and I'm in support of that. It's with program receipts and doing that. But if there are other funds there, then the department is being relieved of that obligation for the current one that's being funded under the position. So is there excess GF dollars then that have not been looked at under the budget that you're now able to move somewhere else, or are you hiring another position into that pool with those dollars?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I may have misspoken. These are fee-supported, so we bring in the revenue through licensing fees, and we use those revenues to support whatever program is required. By statute, every year we're supposed to analyze their programs and recommend fee increases or, if the case is required, decreases.
Mr. Chairman, final comment then. How many investigators will you have in FY13 total?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, if this passes, we will have 19 total.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garrow.
I guess I don't understand now. The testimony was that this was a half-time person, that they were going to be increased to a full-time person, and there's money in here for a full position. So what am I missing?
To the chair, Representative Guerra, the bill requires a dedicated investigator. Mm-hmm. There are numerous issues that I think we have to tackle. One of the things, if you talk to the construction industry, is that they would like more enforcement investigations. I met with the Home Builders Association, and they said that was their number one issue. If this bill passes, my intent is to take a full-time position and get it to ALS and use the current PCN for additional resources out in, for construction industry.
I would just say, Mr. Chair, this is the second time today the Department of Commerce tried to fill a half a position with at least the money for a full position. And maybe it was said during the rest of the testimony, but this is the first I caught on that that's what was going to be done, was that this bill would be used to add half a staff somewhere else.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, and I'll ask Don to say it better. It's
donuts.
First time all year.
Oh, you've done well.
That's my answer.
Yeah.
The current proposal is paid for off of receipts from these particular licensees, which I'm absolutely okay with. And then the additional question was that because we're relieving that pressure on this particular investigation platform, that the division will have, or the department will have an opportunity to go and investigate others. So there'll be a reallocation of available time to investigate other licensees under their control. Is that fair?
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, that is correct.
Thank you.
Yes. Representative Wilson.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, but with that then, if you're going to utilize it for another board, then it could affect how much that board's paying in fees because somebody has to make this money up, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct. Again, as I said, state law requires us to do an annual analysis. For all the programs, there are 40 programs, we will do so, and we will adjust fees based on the usage of in-house resources.
When you say 40 programs, is that 40 boards that you have, these 19 people over 40 boards, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no. Title 8 has 40 programs. 20 of them are run by the division, and 20 of them are boarded.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Faircloth. Fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, I point the committee's attention to fiscal note number one. It's from Corporate Business and Professional Licensing. In FY13, under receipts services, there's $114,900. That amount drops between FY14 through FY18 on this fiscal note to $109,900 for those years, and one position.
Question on the fiscal note, Representative Newman.
Yeah, I mean, fiscal notes, weren't these all through receipt services? So basically, licensors or fees by engineers are covering the cost of this?
Through the chair.
My understanding?
Representative Newman.
Not general fund? Want to clarify that?
Fund source on the bottom in the middle. Receipt services. Is this where the money is coming from?
Yes, sir.
That's it? Or pay for it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It goes on top. Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I move from committee House Bill 337. 27-LS1405/A from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Seeing no objection, so move. Find my. Well, let's see. Wednesday, 9 a.m., House Bill 115, naming Walter J. Hicklin Expressway and HB 361 disposals of State Resources pending referral. I don't know if we got that one or not. I don't see Joe in here. If not, we have bills previously heard. So any comments? We are adjourned till 9 a.m. tomorrow.